The Singapore Grip by J.G. Farrell, adapted by Mike Walker. Episode 2.
It is the night after the night when war came to Singapore. During the day, damage has been inspected. A few of the larger stores have had their windows blown out. There are some fires down by the port, but all in all, the physical effect is not as great as the gradual coming to terms on the part of the Europeans. We are in it now. Walter Blackett, chairman of Blackett and Webb, one of the island's premier trading houses, has been called to see the governor. At this moment, Walter has many things on his mind, not least the fact that over the past few months he has been overbuying and hoarding raw rubber. And now he begins to wonder.
All very well to corner the market. One in the eye for Harvey Firestone and those damned Americans, eh? And bloody shrewd to buy up export licenses from the small producers. Only now, where am I going to find the bloody ships to export the stuff?
Walter, thank you for dropping by.
Dropping by? What's the man on about, dropping by? Ah, Sir Shenton, a pleasure. Well, not quite that, eh? But of course, you call on me any time.
Oh, yes, of course, absolutely.
It's all very well, him standing there looking like a shop window dummy, but who does the work? Who pays for this mug and all his ceremonial?
Can I get you a drink?
Oh, well, a beer would be, yes.
Of course. Not sure where the boys have got to. Seem to have run off, some of them. Oh, dear. You have to do it all yourself. Beer, you said? Goodness me. A bottle, all right. Not quite, actually.
It's called a crown cork, Governor. You open it like this.
Oh, as you can. Utmost of the night. Tonight, too, I should think.
The Governor stutters to a halt and stands, for the longest time, staring blankly at...
Why on earth is he peering at my chin like that? Has he gone gaga? Sir Shenton?
Oh, yes. I rather wanted your opinion, Walter. Well, how the native communities might respond to the current situation, as it were. What happens if the Japanese, so to say, establish themselves on the Malay Peninsula, as they look like doing? Beer all right?
Well, not to mince matters, sir. I'd expect apathy toward both us and the Japanese, till it becomes clear that one side or the other is likely to get the upper hand. A possible exception in our favour would be the politically minded Chinese.
Our Chinese friends... Quite.
The Japanese are even less popular with them than we are. On the other hand, discontent among the Chinese has been on the increase.
All those strikes, labour disputes, wage demands.
Exactly.
So you take a pessimistic view?
Well, I...
Listen to this.
What?
My order of the day, today. We are confident. Our defences are strong and our weapons efficient. Whatever our race, and whether we are now in our native land or have come thousands of miles... We have one aim and one only. It is to defend these shores. Well?
Yes, sir. The beer is fine, thank you.
Oh, jolly good. I'll see you out.
Any news of what's happening in the north?
Well, to tell the truth, our chaps haven't actually managed awfully well. Supposed to stop them in Siam, only they didn't. Japs have landed in force, as it were, base at the peninsula. Well, at the other end of Malaya, you might say. So we've still got a good few divisions between them and us. And the Air Force, of course. Brooke Poppin's boys, stout chaps.
Walter catches himself wondering why exactly these stout chaps didn't manage to stop any of the Japanese bombers the other night. But he merely says...
Good show, sir. Good show.
Because after all, at times like this... You have to keep your chin up. And indeed, there he is again.
Staring at my chin. Why in God's name does the man...
I know. There was something else. Jubilee. This jubilee I've heard of. Ah, which I've heard...
Oh, Blackett and Webb, sir. 50 glorious years. You may remember our slogan. Continuity in prosperity, eh? You agreed that it would do a great deal for the morale of the Asiatic communities if we made a bit of a splash.
Yes, a splash, quite.
Well, I just wanted to reassure you. We won't let the Japs put a stop to it. War or no war, certainty in adversity, eh?
That's a ticket, that's a spirit. Well, we must be getting on. Oh, what lives we lead, eh? What lives?
And thus Walter is dismissed and thinks,
not such a bad chap, the governor. After all, it's not him, it's the office, what he represents. Even so, things aren't good.
His unease is palpable, partly formed from all the raw rubber he cleverly bought up. Perhaps too cleverly. He tells the driver,
take me to the Webb bungalow, Ahmed. I want to...
Me to the Webb bungalow, Ahmed. I want to see how young Matthew is coming on. Young Matthew Webb, the heir. The other side of the business. Young Matthew, to whom Walter fervently hopes that his daughter Joan will be married before the war intervenes. After all,
a business needs the strongest foundations in uncertain times.
The trouble is, Father, he will talk about unreal things, all this socialism and stuff. He won't look at me.
Oh, I don't know. He seems to quite like your legs. At dinner the other night...
Everyone looks at my legs. I mean, half the time, I don't think he can actually see me. Literally. It's so... Sometimes I feel like pulling off his spectacles and giving them a good polish and then putting them back on his nose. He does peer at you terribly.
Disconcerting.
But he does seem quite keen on the idea of touching. Only now he's got that dratted fever, just as I was making... Oh, and we should send that Vera Chang girl packing before he gets a chance to... We must keep his mind on me.
Oh, come, my dear. She's Chinese. I mean, a man might... Well, but never. Not as a fiancée. Just wouldn't do.
Don't forget his father.
I think old Webb was a bit gaga at the end.
Getting Chinese girls to do new gymnastics in his garden. Doesn't sound gaga to me.
He called it building up the national character.
Still, it wouldn't harm to keep an eye on Miss Chiang.
And Walter nods to himself. It would be good to get Joan settled and Matthew properly committed to the business. And Walter idly wonders why the governor was staring at his chin as the car pulls up at the Webb bungalow, where Major Brendan Archer stands on the veranda, declaiming.
It is most important that your animals remain calm. A box of 5-grain potassium bromide tablets from any chemist... 1 tablet for a cat or small dog, 2 for a terrier, 3 for a spaniel. Gas masks, however, are not suitable. Instead, you can put them in a box with a hole covered in wire netting and a blanket soaked in a solution
Major,
of...
what on earth are you doing?
Walter, ARP.
ARP?
Air raid precautions. I'm the warden for our area. Got elected. You know how it is, no one else.
Yeah, but and the pets...
Well, people need to know what to do with them during a raid, so I'm giving a talk tonight. Thought I'd just get in some practice first.
Yeah, I just came over to see how young Webb's getting on.
Well, lots of liquid. Still feverish. M.O. says he'll be through it soon.
Well, let's hope so. Oh, actually, Major, there was something else.
There generally is.
The Jubilee celebration, Blackett and Webb, continuity.
In prosperity, yes.
Well, the governor's very keen, morale booster and all that.
Mm-hmm.
And he expects every one of us, Major, to put our shoulders to the wheel. And I've been thinking it over, and I feel, and the governor feels, that we should expand the parade.
Expand the parade?
You see, not just a procession of floats showing prosperity, continuity and wealth and so on.
Yes, go on.
But the enemies of these things. Figures representing labour unrest, rice hoarding, Japanese aggression, fraudulent accounting, foolish talk.
I'm not sure that I understand.
We'd like you to be inflation.
And exactly what would that entail?
A fiery red costume with horns and, yes, a tail. And you could set about the float... bearing the virgins of prosperity, do you see?
Well, there is the question.
All working together, Major, the governor's very words.
Well, in that case, I suppose...
Yeah, good man, I knew I should count on you. We're going to show Singapore herself as a benevolent octopus at the centre of... Major, may I ask why exactly you're staring at my chin?
Ah, well, you seem actually, forgive me for mentioning it, to have a spot of something yellow. Spot of, well... Egg, I suppose, on your chin.
What? Egg?
It's nothing, nothing at all, I'm sure. Just a spot of egg on your face.
Poor Matthew. Whilst the bombs have been falling, and the island has been pulling itself together to face what must be faced. He has been lost in his fever.
Continuity and prosperity.
Everyone looks at my legs.
150%, eh?
He had surfaced a number of times, receiving glimpses of the world. Joan Blackett.
Hello, you. Are you feeling any better?
Watching him as she puffs away at a long cigarette holder.
Link. Here, you'd Link. This make you feel better.
Chong, his father's old valet, giving him some cool lemonade. The Major, talking in riddles.
Not so good, my boy. Prince of Wales has been repulsed.
But if the Prince called, we must invite. I had no idea he was even in Singapore.
Slowly, over a few days, the moments become longer, clearer. And one day he finds himself caught in the mosquito netting, listening.
What a man. Major? Where is everyone?
Matthew climbs from the soaking sheets, walks to the window, and looks into the garden.
Good Lord. It can't be.
But it is. Miss Vera Chang appears to be doing gymnastics without any clothes on at all.
Is this... How delightful. A dream.
But Matthew soon sees that he is not the only spectator, for an elderly orangutan lies sprawled on a rubber tree, munching an apple, drumming his fingers absent-mindedly on his pale, bulging paunch. And so she swings and stretches and flips and bends and finally double somersaults from the bars to the soft grass and stands catching her breath. Whilst the orangutan slips from his tree, crosses the garden, and places one timid, hairy hand on Miss Chang's naked bottom.
Behave yourself. Off you go.
The ape shambles off, and Miss Chang looks at Matthew framed in the window and waves. Then she runs across the grass and dives into the swimming pool, vanishing utterly beneath the green algae, which coats its surface like a lawn.
How strange. And how beautiful she is. But maybe it never happened at all. It's all a fever dream, yes. The orangutan is obviously an unconscious symbol of my desire for Miss Chang. Except, there he is still. But where is she? Where is she?
What's the news, Major? Any improvement?
Oh, definitely. A lot better.
Good.
Be up and about in a day or two. Though the doctor says young chaps are often a bit depressed after this kind of thing.
Don't worry, I'll bring Joan over. That'll cheer him up.
Joan? Joan?
I want you to jump into the swimming pool for me with all your clothes on.
What? What? Sorry. What was that, Major?
Ah, just saying, the war's going... couldn't be better. The Japs have bitten off more than they can chew this time.
Have they crossed the border into Malaya? Surely we held them at the Siamese border.
They didn't cross so much as go round by sea. Landed at Kota Bharu, struck across country. But don't worry, we have some good lads there. Argyle Highlanders, couple of Indian regiments.
But what about the Navy?
Well, after... Prince of Wales and Repulse were sunk.
Sunk? Our most modern battleship and cruiser, but that's terrible.
It is, yes, yes, yes. But most of the crews were saved.
Well, surely their navies...
Not the Navy, torpedo bombers, actually.
But what was the RAF doing? Couldn't they stop these bombers? We're under attack!
Thunder, actually. Just a storm, that's all.
Major, if they control the sea and our planes are helpless... Doesn't that mean they can land troops wherever they want in Malaya?
The army will hold them back, I hope. Chong, answer that, will you?
Goodness me, you took an age, Chong. Father's coming soon. Well, here you are. Hello, Major. And looking better, I must say.
Oh, Joan.
I think so. Was last time I looked. Aren't you glad to see me? I'm sorry, I'm so very wet. Seems to be a habit, eh?
No, I mean, yes, you are terribly wet.
And indeed she is. Her dress clinging to her so intimately that the Major blushes and looks away. Joan positively sparkles.
Soaked to the skin! That's what comes of trusting your daughter with a weather forecast, eh? Oh, Matthew, you look 100% better. Lost a bit of weight, but that's no bad thing.
No, yes, thank you. I'm actually feeling a lot...
Now, look here, my boy. These are momentous days we're living through, and it's time we had a serious talk about what's to become of you.
Well, you wait
a jiffy. You'll have your chance to say your piece in a moment. What I want to say is this.
Both Matthew and the Major stare at Walter, hypnotized by his high spirits.
Now that your poor father is no longer with us, I feel a sense of responsibility for you. And, well, lad, had my eye on you, and if you don't mind me saying so, it's become pretty clear that you've taken a bit of a shine to my daughter, Joan, here. Frankly, young man, I can't say I blame you, because she's a good young woman, even if she does get her old dad soaked to the skin from time to time.
But Walter, sir, I mean, that is to say... What can I say? I mean, I'm certainly very fond of Joan. That's true. But I never, for a minute, I mean, such an idea has never been...
Oh, I am positively dripping. Now, if you don't mind, Father, I'm going to slip off this dress. You don't mind, do you?
Don't mind in the least, Lydia. But you better ask these gentlemen. I'm sure they're men of the world enough not to mind seeing a fat little piglet like you in your underwear, eh? You don't mind, do you, Major?
Me?
And if you don't mind, Matthew, I'll just share a little bit of your sheet until the rain stops. I'll be much more comfortable.
What a little minx, eh, Major? And what young lady would your mother say if she could see you now, eh?
But if Walter could say what he really means, he would say...
Well, there you are, my boy. They're the goods. You won't find better. Look them over. It's a decent offer. Take it or leave it.
I suppose it might be true. Why don't you ask Walter to send a secretary across? You don't need to do your own typing. Especially not so soon after getting out of bed.
Just a few things I need to find out. Myself. You said her story might be true.
It is, to be honest, rather difficult to, as it were, read Miss Chiang. She's a very complicated young woman.
But interesting. Don't you think, Major?
But as to whether she really is the daughter of a Russian countess and a Chinese tea merchant...
It could be true, surely.
Oh, from what I saw of conditions in Shanghai before the Japs took it over, refugees of every kind, especially Russians, and most of them virtually starving. And some of the things those young women would do to get a meal, well...
And she was in trouble with the Japanese when they took over?
Well, that was true. I can vouch for that.
And people think she's a communist. By the way, isn't she supposed to have a room here?
No. What? Who?
Miss Chiang. I thought she had a room in the house. I was hoping to see her.
And one of Blackinner-Webb's vans came to pick up her belongings the other day. Not that she had a lot. Walter wanted her moved out for some reason.
Where?
I really don't know. Still, whatever her politics, she's a friendly sort of girl, so I expect she'll look in to say hello one of these days.
But surely this is my house, and...
Besides, aren't congratulations in order?
Sorry?
Your engagement to Joan Blackett. Walter tipped me the wink, as he calls it. Apparently they're all hard at work choosing, well, whatever it is one chooses on these occasions.
I know that Walter did say something the other day about it being a good idea, but I never... Wasn't my impression that... After all,
none of my business anyway, I dare say. She seems a pleasant young woman. A little given to... No. Walter thinks it'll be a splendid idea, welding the two sides of the business and all that, if you see what I mean.
If you don't mind, Major, I'm trying to fathom out this excess profits tax.
Well, don't look at me.
Well, it's a quota, really, making sure the companies don't overproduce. And yet... From the Blackett and Webb books, it seems we've got a vast amount of surplus
extra rubber. I don't understand why. Well,
probably old Walter being shrewd, buying it so when the Japs bomb it, he can get compensation.
But that would be terrible, Major.
I was joking, Matthew. Good Lord, you don't really think that I mean, absolute rubbish. No. I mean, damn it, there is a war on. All pulled together now. Even the Yanks.
Quite a bit of a shock there. Pearl Harbor. Damn dirty trick, but they were caught with their... How would your friend Ehrendorf put it? Caught with their pants down?
I don't know. I mean, I don't know what he would say, because he isn't here, not in Singapore. He left after, I think, he and Joan had a... Oh, actually, you know, I don't have any idea what or why or... Sometimes it all seems, especially lately, pointless to me.
Ah, that's the fever. Mustn't let it get you down. I've seen it happen to men out here. A few days' fever, and somehow they never quite get clear of its grip.
Worried though he is about Matthew's lethargy, even the idea of Walter Blackett evading the excess profits tax doesn't raise the old righteous anger. The Major knows he can't watch over him day and night. So he knocks out his pipe and sets off to see his good friend Mr. Wu for dinner. Whilst Matthew sits slumped over the typewriter, his eyes closed, seeing the lithe form of Miss Chang as she turns and bends and stretches. And if we could rise up from the bungalow, up above the European sector, the business sector, the Malay and Chinese quarters, above the airfield and the naval guns pointing out to sea, waiting for the Japanese fleet. If we can hang suspended in the vast blue bowl of the sky and turn and look northwards towards Malaya and follow the lines of the coast from the point where Singapore nestles. If we travel up the peninsula towards the centre of the country, where the capital, Kuala Lumpur, lies spread out below us. As we swoop down through the crowded streets and find ourselves at the portals of 3 Group Corps Army HQ. We also find Matthew's friend, Jim Ehrendorf.
Oh, hi. Jim... Sorry, Captain Ehrendorf, U.S. Army, attached to the CNC, Singapore.
The Observer, Chappie. I believe we might have met. Friend of the Blacketts, aren't you?
Yeah, I asked to see the action, and, well, here I am. If it's okay with you guys.
Sinclair. Sinclair, Captain. I think General Heath had a call, said you were coming. Well, all allies now, old man. After the Japs gave you a bloody nose at Pearl Harbor, come along, you're just in time for dinner.
You have time for dinner?
Jim Ehrendorf has been as good as his word to Joan. He packed up and left, after trying to write a farewell letter.
Dear Joan, my dear Joan, my dearest Joan, Joan, my dear, Joan, God damn it, woman, what are you doing to me? Joan, I'm going to the front. I may not return, and if I don't, then obviously I won't. Damn it to hell. What does it matter anyway? What does anything matter now? Ehrendorf's second law. In human affairs, things inevitably go wrong. They are always slightly worse at any given moment than at any preceding moment.
Here we are, Captain. Gentlemen, this is Captain Ehrendorf, U.S. Army. Captain, may I present Brigadier Phillips, Major Jewell, Major Harding, Captain Crawley, Captain...
Ehrendorf's second law appears to apply exactly to the atmosphere in the mess. There is a feeling of incipient disaster hanging in the air, like the smoke that hangs in a theatre after the firing of a blank cartridge.
And Lieutenant Beaufort Smythe. Sit down, please, Captain. Welcome. Nice to have you with us. All you Yanks.
Bit late, but better late than never, eh? Heard you had a little bit of trouble at Pearl Harbor, eh?
I guess you could say that, sir.
So now you've decided to do your bit, eh?
I think you'll find, sir, that the United States will do its bit and more.
Jolly good show, I say. Hands across the water and all that. Welcome aboard.
So, Brigadier, I hear you were stationed up at the Siamese border.
In a bloody tropical downpour while those buggers back in Singapore thought about the position. Supposed to advance. Give the Japs a bloody nose while they landed in Siam. Well, they landed all right. And we just got wet and came back home with our tails between our legs.
Popham has gone now, thank God. General Marsh has his finger on things. It won't happen again.
Chop, boy. Guests are waiting. We're all waiting. Serve the food.
Jim Erendorf has always been fascinated by strategy. And, try as he may, and in spite of his wish not to offend his hosts in any way, as the dinner reaches the pudding stage, he can't resist asking.
Is your position now any better, Captain Sinclair?
How so, old chap?
Well, as I see it, you're going to make a stand at the Kedar River.
Stop them there, yes.
But your forces are scattered over a dozen miles, and the Japanese have already disrupted the line with tank sorties, and there are no reserves, from what I've heard.
Nonsense, Captain. The Leicesters and the East Surreys have been ordered up.
Rubbish, Sinclair. The Leicesters and the Surreys have been ordered back to Kuala Lumpur.
Eat up, old chap. Or don't you like prunes and custard?
But don't you see, Captain Sinclair, that if the Japs have heavy armor...
Who says they have heavy armor?
Well, don't they? Back in Singapore, they
seem... Back in Singapore.
Well, perhaps you could give us the benefit of your further opinion, Captain. Based, no doubt, on your long experience of warfare in this part of the world.
Well, in such a complex matter...
No need to be bashful, Captain.
Bloody yanks.
If you really want to know, sir, our forces are dangerously exposed. They should be withdrawn to this side of the Kedar River at once. That way, there is at least a chance of stopping the Japanese tanks.
A silence falls. The officers lined up along the table stir their pruny custard with anticipation, waiting for the remark which will put this brash, too clever by half American in his proper place. They wait as the brigadier's lower lip climbs up, up, and moistens his neatly clipped moustache, and the veins stand out on his sweating forehead, and his eyes begin to bulge, and...
Just came in, sir. Marked urgent.
Very good, Sergeant.
Sir?
Orders, General Heath. Our forces have withdrawn and are setting up defensive lines behind the Kedar River. It appears the Japanese are rather better provided with tanks than we had...
Well, thank God for that.
Ever seen a fight, Captain? Ever been in one?
No, sir, but I do hope to...
I'm sure you do, and you'll get your wish. Gentlemen, we are to join Murray Lyon's command at the Kedar River. Inform your men. We leave at dawn.
Captain Erendorf, you haven't finished your prompt.
What a load of clowns they all are. Still, things are moving now, and things are getting worse.
Things are moving now, and Mr. Wu thinks they're getting worse. He says the Japs are going to walk down through Malaya and come knocking at our back door. God knows where they get it from.
Sorry, Major.
What are you doing with the parallel bars, if I might ask?
Where do they get it from?
Who?
The Chinese.
Well, more to the point, what if it's true? No, forget I said that. It's rubbish. Defeatist. If I might mention it, Matthew, if you don't, if you could... Shave, actually. Doesn't look good, you see. You seem to have lost all interest lately.
Quite true. As the days pass and Miss Chang doesn't appear, so Matthew finds less and less reason.
A young man like you should think about getting married.
You never did you, Major?
Well, I suppose not. Though between you and me, there have been moments when I've regretted it. Just now and then. Anyway, if you don't want to get married, I think it might be a good idea to mention that fact to the Blacketts in the not-too-distant future.
I suppose if nothing very much actually matters, then there's no particular reason why I shouldn't get married, is there? Really? Well, go over and see him a bit later.
Are you absolutely sure about that, Matthew? It doesn't seem to me a terribly good basis, as it were.
One has to make up one's mind in the long run, doesn't one?
Does one?
Hey, back!
Hold it down there!
Get out of the way!
It's going to fall!
To tell the truth, the bombing has been less than effective. Only one building, a Chinese-owned department store, has been badly hit, and there are no casualties to speak of. Matthew, on the other hand, is feeling deeply perplexed by the intricacies of the rubber business as he walks away from the fire deeper into the Chinese district. Suddenly, caught by a delightful smell of...
cloves? Cinnamon and cloves?
He stops outside a spice merchant's and stands idly watching a money changer at his stall, carrying on business unaffected by the war going on around him.
Is self-interest the most efficient producer of wealth? Does exploitation matter if, in general, things get better? Do human beings only produce their best when they're working for their own profit and not for the community? What is the answer?
I cannot say, Matthew, for I have not heard the question.
Vera! Miss Chang, where have you been? Why haven't you come to see us? To see me?
They told me not to come back.
Who told you?
A man from Mr. Blackett's office. It does not matter. It is not in the least pressing. Tell me about yourself. I am so glad to see you are now well again. I was afraid you might kick the bucket.
Vera, why did they tell you not to come back?
They say my job has been finished. They bring me suitcase and money and a letter of thanks signed by Miss Blackett. I think it is because she is jealous of my beauty.
Do you really think so? Lovely.
Yes, it is because also she does not have my command or foreign language and because my breasts are bigger than hers. She does not have my poise either, which I inherited from my mother, who was a Russian princess, forced to show a pair of clean heels during the revolution. Well, there. It is not worth bothering about.
They have started to stroll away from the fire, the fuss, and Vera slips her light hand into the hollow of his elbow. And he thinks...
her touch is as distinctive as her voice.
And she says...
you must halt. Aye, but I must go on, because the silkworms are hungry.
You have silkworms? How delightfully Chinese.
No, it's too hot here. It is a line from an old song about a young woman who is separated from her lover.
Look, can I at least invite you for a cup of tea?
I'm afraid I must visit a friend who is dying. Will you come with me?
If it's not...
No, not one bit. We are here now.
But that's a warehouse.
No, it is a dying house. This is where many people come to die.
It is like... it is like a warehouse. Just stacks and stacks, like a wine cellar. Maybe I should... it's so big, so heartless.
It is very sad, yes. But it has always been so. It is traditional. Those who come to bring food or water to their relatives, they will come here too, maybe. It is to avoid the bad luck for a house when there is a death in it.
And Vera's dark eyes search Matthew's face to see if he understands. And he thinks...
what a dismal way to end up.
And she thinks...
how attractive he is. How stooping and short-sighted. What lovely round shoulders, and his complexion, so pale and scholarly. He is, in every way...
perfect. For the fact is, Vera has been brought up as Chinese girls have been for centuries, to find stooping, bespectacled, literary young men who will do well in the civil service as attractive. Things have, of course, begun to change with the advent of Chinese communism, where the young fighter with rippling muscles and fists of steel is now the ideal. But Vera, in her way, is an old-fashioned girl.
The one I come to see, he befriended me when I was escaping from Shanghai. His family and children, they were killed somewhere. Who knows where? He was working as a rubber tapper. He had a little estate. Leyang, Liang.
That's near one of our estates. But I do think I'd better leave.
No, we are nearly there. Hey, Ah Su Shi, 你今天怎么样?
我东想你, 好好。
I've bought some noodles and some rice wine and...
That's good of you, daughter. But who is the giant?
This is my friend, Matthew Webb. He's the son of old Mr. Webb.
Webb? The son? Oh, Mr. Webb, you, your company, they swindle all smallholder, European.
Oh, no, surely not. I mean, hardly. Look, I will go. I'm upset.
British steal money from my tree.
How on earth do they do that?
We all given share of rubber we can tap, but inspectors all European. They lie about our trees and give less share and give Brackett and Webb and Rangerfield more share.
You'd think at death's door he'd have more to worry about. Only it might be true.
New trees to be planted.
The clones?
Only European. Not Malay. Not Chinese. We not allowed by law. So they will steal our rubber by law. Always by law.
Look, I'd better go. I have to be somewhere. But I will see you again, Vera. I will. Won't I?
And let's drink a toast to General Marsh and his boys, eh? Give the chaps a bloody nose. Oh, and let's not forget our own part in the struggle, the Jubilee procession, eh? Vital for morale, so we'll be looking for 150% from all of you, eh?
As always, Walter, damn fine claret.
Well, hard enough keeping it in good condition in this climate. Still, do our best. And what doesn't suit some does suit others. Hey, Joan? Hey, you're looking particularly lovely tonight. Don't you think, Matthew?
Mm. Oh, yes. Yeah. Absolutely. Yes. And there is something I'd like to say.
What's the matter, Matthew? Cat got your tongue?
Are you sure about this?
Yes. Everyone has been, well, the Major and all of you, a lot going on. Preparations, Joan and her mother, wedding plans.
Oh, and get it straight, young fella, or we'll never arrive.
Well, that is to say, to you sitting around this table who knew my father, well, rather better than I did, I'm afraid, I hope you won't mind if I call you my friends.
Not at all, yeah.
I just wanted to say, and I assure you, I do mean it. I suppose I should have spoken up before, but... although I do like Joan very much, I, don't really want to marry her, if you see what I mean. Well, that's all I wanted to say. Not marry her.
Things inevitably get worse. Herrendorf's second law seems destined to be proved over and over.
One of ours? As far as I know, we don't actually have any at the moment. One of theirs, a zero.
Well, lads, pick them up. You've been shelter soon. Get your tea soon enough.
Oh, I got a tea, son. Give it a beer.
Come on. What do we have? For poor bloody infantry as usual. Some armored cars, a few anti-tank guns.
Do they have tanks?
We can't be certain. Anyway, in this mud, they'll never get them up.
I wouldn't be too sure about that, Captain Sinclair. I recall people laughing at the Japs using bicycles.
until they proved a perfect mode.
Get down!
Jesus Christ!
Erendorf and Sinclair lie in the mud as a truck burns and men are pulled or carried from the wreck. Some burn beyond recognition, some utterly untouched. But all now knowing that something is going to happen soon and that it will not be good.
What now, Sinclair?
I have to get back to my men.
But what is going to happen now?
It's going to start, old man. Don't worry. They won't advance till their big guns have softened us up.
Like happy families, all wars are the same. Noisy, confusing, and terrifying, unless you find your way to a place of clarity, which is generally equivalent to temporary madness. Or so Jim Erendorf thinks. Captain Sinclair and the rest have their training to fall back on.
Major! Get those tank traps set up across the road. They won't do much bloody good, but they might make them pause. Captain Sinclair!
Yes, sir.
Take our American friend down to the crossroads. You'll enjoy that, Captain Erendorf. We've a couple of anti-tank guns.
You reckon they'll come up the road, sir?
With what they've done up to now and with tanks, if they have tanks, well, it's what I do. A hard punch straight into the middle of our lines. If we knock out the lead tanks, the rest are stuck until they push them aside.
Can't they go round?
In this mud? Off the road, the buggers will sink. Go on, off you go.
At least it stopped raining.
Bloody jungle rot. Hate this place.
Seems well fortified. Sandbags and...
The jungle. Malaya. Why are we here? Why are they here?
Do you think we'll stop them?
If we can hit the first two or three right there, where the road falls away into forest on either side, I think we have a chance.
That's pretty close, Sinclair.
All right, everyone in position. I don't want any hold up with ammunition. Once we start, we have to keep up a steady fire. And remember, anyone killed because he isn't wearing a helmet will be on a charge.
Hey, nice one.
Captain Sinclair.
Come on, Erendorf. Get off the bloody road, unless you want to get run down.
Load! Look!
Remember, 700 yards, no sooner, all right.
God, they're huge.
Okay, steady, men. Steady. Fire!
Loaded! Fire the bloody thing!
What's happening? For God's sake, why don't they stop?
Because the bloody shells can't penetrate their armor. Fire!
Jesus, we're for it now. Fall back, sir.
We have to try again.
It doesn't make any goddamn difference, Sinclair. We have to get...
Careful with that octopus! It's the only one we've got.
Something for dishonest account in easy sport.
Whilst Malaya trembles under the tank tracks of the Japanese army, Singapore is in the comfortable grip of a large rubber octopus, fashioned by craftsmen from Blackett and Webb to represent the island. Its tentacles grip benignly eight young women labelled Hong Kong, Batavia, Saigon, and so on. Matthew, who is to represent continuity in the Jubilee Parade, is struggling with his costume and his surprise that Walter hasn't held his treatment of Joan against him.
Dignity, my boy. I want you to radiate an aura of dignity, right? Say, hey, Hong Kong, what are you doing with that tentacle?
Major, there you are. It is you, isn't it?
Actually, it's inflation.
In a scarlet boiler suit with horns.
Oh, don't ask me. I was summoned to the dress rehearsal and here I am. Not that I see many other evils or advantages.
Well, I'm continuity. And Joan is... Is she Britannia?
Oh, whatever. She looks very splendid up there on her float. Have you...
Not a word. I did wave earlier, but...
You can't blame her, poor girl.
Well, I don't think you could call her poor. Anyway, Kate still speaks to me.
Look, Kate is 12. She doesn't understand.
And so does Walter.
Walter would do anything for his parade. Though I fear it will never happen.
Ah, Major, splendid. Hey, don't take the balaclava off yet. Not before we've walked it through.
It is rather hot, Walter.
Sacrifices, we all have to make them. Except that stupid son of mine. Did you see, little Kate, as industry, holding a cornucopia of all things rubber? Wretched boy only goes and puts a sheaf of Johnnies in there.
Oh, dear.
Actually, yes.
Walter, yep. I was wondering, the slogan.
Continuity. No,
the other one, all in it together, near the dragon.
Oh, not a dragon, a hookworm, actually. Didn't want to offend the Chinese, very fond of dragons.
Yes, but wouldn't it, I wonder, read better as all together or all working together? There seems to be something not quite right about all in it together.
I don't think so. Seems... Look, not in the van, you bloody idiot! On top of it! These people, excuse me. On top of the van! No one will see it inside!
It's a bit odd. All the Chinese workmen are here, but, well, most of the Europeans aren't.
The Chinese are here because it's safer than working on the docks building defences. The Europeans aren't here because... I fear it's about to start raining bombs on Walter's parade.
It is only a dress rehearsal.
Not for them, old chap. I suggest we get under cover.
As always, the sirens are late, not wishing to interrupt business, and the bombers are early, eager to win honour for Emperor and family.
These bales will do. They're not that close. It's the industry and port areas they want to hit. You know, Matthew, we need to organise ourselves better.
The parade? You said it would never happen.
Not the parade, the volunteer fire service. We must get more men, all kinds of men. More vehicles and more pumps if we can. I have a feeling that we're going to be needed.
You think they'll get here? You think they'll come?
I think that maybe Walter was right. We are all in it together. Up to our necks.
After their meeting at the dying house, and there is, Matthew found, nothing like a warehouse full of dying people to make you feel full of life, he and Vera have agreed to meet again at the Great World Funfair, which, to Matthew's surprise, is still functioning, even though...
The war isn't so far away now.
But no lights.
Which is true. Only a sort of dusk, lit by candles in paper lanterns, and shadows moving in the shade.
Well, it's all rather nicer than it was before, don't you think?
Oh, yes, Matthew. Quite tip-top.
I tell you what, though, I'm jolly thirsty. Do you mind if we... Look, there, those coconuts. I bet they'll be...
Oh, no, not good.
Sorry? Surely the health authorities have...
Coconut milk is not good for men.
What on earth?
Over here, this is better. A good soup. You try it? Qing来一个糖啊.
Here you are, my dear. Just a thing for your handsome barbarian, eh?
Miss Chang knows exactly the course she wishes the evening to take. The soup, monkey soup, is a well-known aphrodisiac. And were we able to slip inside the storekeeper's head...
See the burly warrior sharpening his jade aloes before losing them at the Coal Palace. Ah, me. Ah, my, there was a time when I, too, even old Wang, still enjoyed an occasional bit of feng shui.
Delicious. I'll have another bowl, if I may.
Matthew is even ready to drink a third bowl. But the stallholder, having regard to the capacity of even so burly a barbarian, cautions Vera against this, and the couple walk on.
You know, Matthew, I am worried, all of a flutter, about the prospect of the Japanese. They have my name, they know of me, and every day they are getting closer.
Vera feels that all the monkey soup must have put Matthew in a protective mood. And she is right.
Oh, don't worry. I'll look after you. Besides, I don't think they'll get this far. I don't think they will. Anyway, let's talk of something more cheerful.
Vera, aware that the situation and Matthew has caused her own yin essences to flow, despite her worries, is happy to accede. And presently the couple find themselves walking through the town under a vast yellow moon.
Look, Vera, why don't you come back to the bungalow tonight?
I don't want to go where I'm not welcome, Matthew.
Oh, but you are welcome.
Mr. Blackett and Miss Blackett have told
me... It's nothing to do with them. The place belongs to me.
It doesn't matter. They have behaved badly and I will not fall over backwards to please them.
Oh, really?
In fact, it would suit Vera very well to go back to Matthew's house, since her own room is not much more than a cupboard. But...
I cannot lose face now by changing my mind. Impossible. So we will just have to use... my room.
Your room?
This way. It is very small.
How many people live here? The place must be divided and subdivided and sub.
There are many people, even families, grandparents. It is hard to find somewhere to live in Singapore, Matthew.
But I have lots of room.
Come in. This is my room.
Vera's room is by no means the smallest in the place, though Matthew could cross with one step. He does not. He sits on the bed and she sits beside him. He looks around at some books in Chinese. Works of literature, works of self-improvement, works of sexual technique. Pictures, the late Tsar looking very hairy. King George, Myrna Loy, the actress. Vera is concerned. She no longer feels the...
essence of the yin. And I fear Matthew's yang has diverted into another channel, no longer fierce and unbridled.
Matthew's thoughts, seeing a volume of Marx on Vera's shelf, have returned to...
economics. Is it all just economics? Walter Blackett probably hangs his suits in a space the size of this. So could I if I wanted. Can one be wealthy and yet live a just life? There. Someone coughing. Probably TB. And because she must live like this, Vera could catch it and...
He puts a comforting arm around her. And she begins to feel the yin flowing. And soon his hands are wandering, somewhat inexpertly, over her clothes until she is obliged to unbutton herself. Otherwise, nothing would get done. And he tries to undress without utterly destroying the tiny room. And poor Vera receives a shock. Matthew's private parts are...
Dusty? Has it been so long since...
No. Talcum powder. It's, after my bath.
And so now, the two rivers, the yin and the yang, which have been separated, may begin to flow gently towards each other and...
Wait, Matthew.
Sorry? Wait. What is it, Vera?
Vera, who has carefully educated herself in the arts of love, is determined that this sacred moment should not take place in a beastly, barbarian, Western manner.
Like two drunken rickshaw coolies colliding at some foggy crossroads.
No. This conjoining of the elements must be civilized, and Matthew must be given, as he stands naked and blinking without his glasses, a proper education in the arts of love.
Now, first, the naming of names. This... is Kui Tou or Yu Chang, or how do you say, jade flower stem, or even Yong Feng, okay?
What, all those words mean that?
Oh, not literally, of course. One, you see, means head of turtle, another jade stalk, but they all add up.
Ah, quite. But...
Just listen, okay? Here is Yun Seng, or secret pouch.
Ooh.
Here Yu Min, or the Qi Longmen, which obviously leads to Yu Tai.
Yes.
But we must not forget the five natural moods which you will find in yourself and the five revealing signs that you will find in your perfect partner. So,
ooh.
So,
uh-huh.
So,
ooh.
So and so. Though there are the 100 anxious signs and the five male overstrainings which you must...
Vera, can't we just...
Vera sees that the yang spirit which formerly had seized Matthew and held him up by the ears like a rabbit... is no longer gripping so firmly. So she decides to content herself with one final...
And a most important name, Che Shan Chu or Pearl on Jade Threshold, you see?
Sorry, I'd better put my glasses on again. And if I can just move the lamp. Ah, yes. Here.
Oh, yes. There.
Now, Vera, can we...
But of course. Oh, we can begin.
Oh, wonderful.
Now, the first position is bamboo swaying in spring wind. To be followed by butterfly hovering over snow-white peony.
Vera, please.
Matthew, what is it exactly that you don't understand? Let me go over it again.
Matthew sighs. It is clear that some time will pass before the rivers of Yin and Yang will reach their natural confluence at last. And all the time, the sound of weary coughing has not ceased for an instant.
The Singapore Grip by J.G. Farrell. Adapted for radio by Mike Walker. J.G. Farrell was played by Robert Glenister, Matthew Webb by Jonathan Cake, Joan Blackett by Samantha Sparrow, and Jim Ehrendorf by Kenny Blythe. Major Archer was played by John Rowe, Vera Chang by Sulin Lui, Walter Blackett, Timothy Bateson, Brigadier, Carl Johnson, Governor, John East, and Captain Sinclair by Alex Trinder. The gamelan music was composed and performed by Felix J. The Singapore Grip was directed by Peter Kavanagh.